when you understand and accept the truth of the gospel, the greatest wisdom you'll have for your life will come from within you.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution for the 11th of December 2014, the podcast that tells you how to think, not what to think. We're coming to you from the Spit Polish GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Buckminster Fuller we say you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And here from deep in the heart of Texas once again is Mr. Michael Williams, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution. G'day, Mike.
Hey, Barris. Goodness gracious, I got tired listening to your quote this time. That was a tough one.
Would you like me to repeat it?
If you want a new model, stop doing this and start doing that and wait till you destroy the old model and then build a new one. Oh, geez, can't we just chill?
No, you can't. No, you're on the clock here. There ain't no chilling here, bro.
Good evening, Barris.
Good evening, Michael.
A beautiful day in Houston. Goodness. Finally some sunshine today. Oh, we've been without sunshine too long. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
She's going to start singing that. That's the truth. Oh, mate, well, up here we haven't got the sunshine yet, so there you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe it's headed north, so I've never heard of the sun being headed north, but maybe it is.
Okay. This could
this
be
is a revolution, isn't it? Right?
It is. A revolution. A revolution?
So sunshine could be heading north now.
It's a sunshine revolution.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And we're off to some kind of start here. I'm not sure what it is. But
yeah. It's me either. Me either. Can you still see me?
I still see you. And you're still functioning. Yeah, this is...
Well, I am functioning. Well, that's nice to know. Hey, what are the dates of Calgary, Michael?
Barris, I don't have a clue. I know it's late January.
Well, last week I said only 5 weeks to Calgary, and then I heard from Jeff who said, hey, it's only 7 weeks to Calgary. Do you have your passport in order? And I said, I'm getting the photos today. So, oops. Sorry, Jeff.
Exactly. Wow. So, yeah, what are our dates there? Do you have it up? Or were you really wondering when do we go?
I just got through telling you I don't know. Where is Jeffrey when you need him?
I don't know.
Gospel Revolution.
Our first question today comes from one of the Dannys.
Again?
I know, they're a pushy bunch, aren't they?
See, instead of saying the three Dannys, just say Danny.
Danny asked today, this is Danny number three, Michael.
Danny.
Yeah, not Danny. Not Danny number two. Or even Danny, for that matter. Danny asks, good evening, good sir.
Good sir, wow. Have you gone up a notch in his height?
I don't know, but why call
good
us
sir now?
Why callest thou me good? Do you have any resource on Bible canon lists? I was just listening to Mike's series on unbelief, and he mentioned the first canon was Paul's books and Matthew. Just wanted to see a timeline of progression. You seem like one who might have a resource to suggest. Thank you. Well, I answered Danny in a private message, and I'm just going to simply say what I told him. Ignorance in this digital age is a choice. You have an internet, and it's replete with truth and lies. It's up to you to figure out the difference. But the short answer is this, Danny. For the first 400 years of the church, there was no canon. There was simply no canon. I have put together a couple of timelines, life of Paul, life of the apostles, early church history, and the canon history, all of which lead me to the same conclusion, and I'd be more than happy to share these with you, and I'd just simply send you the files that that I use myself, and I'd be more than happy to. These are based on a whole bunch of different... See, there is a man called Usher. Usher wrote a book called The Annals of the World History, and there are other historical documents, and when you take them all together, it's difficult to ignore that there is a line, an unmistakable line that flows through history that tells us what happened and when. Now, we know that history is always written by the victors. You're not going to get a Vietnamese history of its independence from anyone else but the Vietnamese, because everyone else went in and didn't quite win. So that's the way it happens. If the Catholic Church killed a few people in order to maintain their belief system, the Catholic Church is going to write the history. If the Protestant Church, in retaliation, writes another history because it killed a few people to prove that any opposition to it was wrong, you see the problem here. Mm-hmm. And it's called historical revisionism. Revisionism is when people revise history after the event, and really we have no factual, forensic, psychological evidence. And we're gonna touch on that in the next question. Long story short, between the life of Jesus and 400 AD, there may have been anything up to 300 different canons, accepted within small groups, splinter groups, major groups, minor groups, all kinds of groups. And eventually Constantine called together all of the bishops of the church at that time. This is after Jerome had rewritten the Bible into what's called the Vulgate, and after Augustine had, on the basis of that rewriting, decided what orthodoxy should believe. Then we got to the formalization of the scriptures under Constantine, and that's all we really have.
Yeah. I think one thing that that people enjoy, Barris, is that the process of acceptance. I remember hearing this, and I don't know within what time frame really it is, but the ones that there were books that were accepted first, it seems that Paul's writings were generally accepted, and just one book of the Gospels, and later on there were other books. Book of James was accepted in dispute. And the book of Revelation was highly disputed. I think that's one thing that really interests people, is the ones that cleared the hurdle very easily and those that kind of got politically added, if you will.
There is...
Of the ones we know of.
Oh, that's a good point. There are four different reasons why, given by Protestant... teachers, as to why books were incorporated into the Bible. There are similar reasons why Catholic teachers agree. One of the major reasons is because there were certain books that were in common currency at the time. The most common of these books were the writings of Paul, followed by some interesting writings which were not of the other apostles. The other apostles are the third group, namely James, Peter, John, which incorporates all of the end of the Bible from, say, Hebrews on, isn't it? And which Martin Luther said should not even be at the end of the Bible, which is why we have them at the end of the Bible. They were put at the end because they didn't deserve to be in the middle. Some of them were added as foils to Paul because we can't have too much of this grace business, don't you know? We better have a bit of works business in this. And also they were added because they were apostles, people who'd seen Jesus. Now, they couldn't fight hard against the concept that Paul had seen Jesus because they couldn't. How do you prove a negative? How do you prove he didn't see Jesus? You can prove if someone did see someone, but you can't prove if someone did not see someone. And because Paul was in such common currency in the early church, you really couldn't kick him out. Now, that's not to say that everything that we see that purports to be written by Paul has been written by Paul. Firstly, some books were written in those days under a pseudonym so that they would be more widely accepted. Secondly, books that were possibly originally written by who they are said to be written by, they've been added to. Mm-hmm. 2 Thessalonians is an excellent example of this.
Yeah.
Scholars for the last 1,000 years have wondered, did Paul write all of that book? They believe he wrote most or some of it, but they don't know how much of it he wrote.
Yeah.
Other books, they just say, it could be that it was totally written under a pseudonym. And then you have the Catholic Church that comes along and says, we have to have works involved, because if we don't have works involved, then we can't have confession to priests. If we don't have confession to priests, we don't have an income, and we don't have a reason, raison de vivre. You have to figure out for yourself what is real. And what the Gospel Revolution believes, teaches, and holds to is this: whatever is in the New Testament that cannot be confirmed in the Scriptures, that is, what most people call the Old Testament and what Jesus called the Scriptures, whatever is in the New Testament that cannot be confirmed by the Scriptures must be held to be a good opinion, a strong opinion, but nevertheless just an opinion.
Yes, that is the position of the Gospel Revolution. And really, there were only 2 things that were held as truth by Paul. And that's the truth contained in the law. The law was truth. That's one of the guideposts that we maintain in the Gospel Revolution that others just completely throw away. That truth was contained in the law. And then the truth of the gospel. So if you're rightly dividing the word of truth, you're dividing the difference between the truth that is contained in the law, the truth that is there, and then the truth of grace. So it's really the difference, the dividing of the word of truth is the dividing of law and grace, and understanding those two in their own context. Because we were so taught about the purity of the word of God from cover to cover, you know, right through the maps or whatever was the last thing in your Bible, when people hear anyone able to discredit the absolute validity as Word of God, the New Testament, there is this tendency, Barris, to just say, well, what the heck? Let's just, you know, none of it's true. And that is far from the stance that we've taken. That's far from the stance that was a major part of the shift in my understanding of the gospel many years ago, and that was concluding that the only thing that was scripture is collectively in the Old Testament, what Jesus called the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. And now, instead of shaking my foundation in the work of the cross, that actually solidified my foundation in the work of the cross. It really helped to understand that Peter, James, and John's writings, I have nothing to say about how inspired they felt in writing those, because you can be quite inspired to write something that is completely, believe me, I've been very inspired to say some very wrong things in my life. But when you begin to maintain that the scriptures are the foundation of understanding of all of the gospel, not part of the gospel, not some of the gospel, and but it is all revealed in the scriptures, That really is a very firm place to come from.
So the other day, the sweet potato and popcorn king of Georgia, Mel Martin, said to me, we ought to have a segment called Bumper Stickers. So I said, fine. God gives you the idea, you come up with the bumper stickers. So here is the very first of the bumper sticker segment.
Gospel Revolution Bumper Stickers.
You only hear what you want to hear, and if you say I'm not that way, well, that's what you want to hear.
Gospel Revolution Bumper Stickers.
2 Timothy 2:15 says, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth.
Boy, I remember this one.
This is the one. This is the verse, friend, that introduced me to you.
Really?
Because yes, it is. Because you mentioned this verse on...
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, it was the old tape, Falling from Grace.
Yeah.
And in it, you mentioned this verse, and I'm going, oh, my God. It could have been actually the first time that I ever saw that my filters.
Mm.
I have a saying, and that is that no one sees their filters. They only can see through their filters.
Yes.
And what we're taught for all of our lives become our filters. And you can tell me anything you like, but if it does not fit in the box that I was raised to believe was the right box, the true box,
yeah,
the only box, then it doesn't belong. But somehow what you said broke through my box. I've got to tell you this. The proper translation of the verse, I still have problems with your interpretation of it, but I cannot deny that it's an accurate and acceptable interpretation. See, this whole thing, this whole box of mine, and I'm still trying to burst out of it. Yeah, you know, we have a saying in Australia that somebody couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. Well, that's me.
Well, you know, Bears, that's a very powerful statement that people see through their filters. They don't see their filters. And it really does take something to cause someone to observe their own filters. What a powerful thing. And I think that that is a lot of these moments, this, as you're going to hear as Barris explains what he heard, it takes these things to cause you to stop. And I've never heard it put in a better way, that it causes you for the first time, instead of seeing through your filters, to observe your filter and see how you're looking at things as opposed to how things might look. And again, leading us to the conclusion that in the Gospel Revolution, we don't try to tell you what to think. We want to tell you a better way to think.
I love that. I've started to tack that onto the description at the intro or the outro of the show, and it just means so much to me, mate. We don't try to tell you what to think. We try to introduce you to a better way of how to think. So this verse says, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, what does that mean? Well, of course, it means exactly what it says, which is you need to study the Bible so that when anyone asks you a question, when anyone comes up with anything different, when anyone comes up with a heresy or anything else, why, you will have, by rightly dividing the word of truth, have the right answer for them. You're a workman that doesn't need to be ashamed. You, Timothy, are a young fella who has studied the word, and you've studied it, and now you don't need to be ashamed because you know the whole thing because you've rightly divided the word of truth. That's what I was taught.
Mm-hmm. And also study to win approval from God. That by studying the Bible, that's how you get approval from God was connoted to me that this meant.
Oh, yeah. I had a Schofield Bible. I had a Charlie Schofield Bible, mate, and it was so marked and so highlighted and so underlined that somebody, when I was moving off to a new season of my life, they said, you should see Barris's Bible. He knows the Lord. Mm. And I felt so good, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I listened to yourself, Mike Williams, and you said this. Let's read this verse.
Yes.
Study to show yourself approved to God.
not approved by God.
Study to show to yourself that you are approved by God.
Study to show yourself. Study to show yourself. I remember. Study to show thyself. And people in the room just came unglued because for the first time they observed their filter. I love the way you said that. And they observed their filter, and I think it was a breakthrough for much of the rest of their understanding of the scriptures. I think it was for you. Study to show thyself. Now, if you study, what will you be showing yourself? As a result of rightly dividing the word of truth, you will be showing yourself by studying the scriptures. What you will find out in the scriptures and what you'll find out in the truth is that you are approved of God. So it turned this whole thing on its ear for me, Paris, and I guess it did you too. And suddenly studying was not a work to win approval. Studying was simply the means by which I found out that I was approved.
Ah, tastes good.
Tastes like apple crisp to me this morning.
Let's have a look in the Greek. Study. It doesn't mean to the study that you and I would think of a study. It says it really means put a focused effort into, or hurry up to understand is another way you could say it. There's a concept of speed. In fact, the Greek word is spoudazo, from which we get speed, but it's to make a prompt and very focused effort. Parastemi, to stand beside. In English, we say he stands by his word. That's what this Greek word means. Pari means beside, stemi, to stand firmly. So be quick to stand beside yourself. Be quick to stand beside yourself. Mm-hmm. What yourself? The yourself that is dokimos, acceptable, approved. That which, I mean, if you were in a fruit selection factory, you'd be picking that fruit to send to market. You are acceptable. You are totally approved. Theos, God. So, quickly and focusedly stand beside yourself as approved by God. And if you are, then you will be a workman not to be ashamed, that doesn't need to be ashamed, and you will be considered rightly dividing the word of truth. Who was the Logos of truth? Who was the Logos who said, I am the truth? Who was the Logos? Who was it? It was Jesus. So you will now be a workman or a laborer, really, is the word, that has no shame, rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, rightly dividing the Logos, rightly understanding, rightly dividing means to make a straight cut, to clearly and incisively know exactly what the word of truth, the Logos of truth is, or who it is. As you say, Michael, whatever was what in the Old Testament becomes a who in the New Testament. Study to show yourself approved by God. Study to show yourself. Study to show yourself. If you want to study anything, family, and I want to talk to all of our family, the family that that is half with us, the family that is partly with us, the family that is all with us. Here is your study. You want to know your homework for next week? Study to show that to yourself that God approves of you. Yeah. Oh, Michael.
You are your own best counselor. When you understand and accept the truth of the gospel, the greatest wisdom you'll have for your life will come from within you. Because, see, the only counselor that is any good, that's worth their weight at all, the only counselor that's any good is the counselor that has accurate information about you. Now, the thing of it is almost nobody gives their counselor accurate information about them or their relationships. It comes through their filters, number one. So when I talk to my counselor, I'm going to tell my counselor what a bad boy Barris is and how right I am and how wrong he is. And we're just, you know, the reason we're at this impasse is because Barris just isn't a nice person. So that would be my filter of any situation or any relationship. So I'm not honest with my counselor. Now, why do we not want to be honest? Because we still feel a lack of approval. We're still trying to win people's approval, so we are deliberately dishonest, and we can see we're being dishonest, and we can't stop ourselves.
And on top of that, there is a second layer, and the second layer is we can't even see. You're telling the counselor about me through your filters. Yeah. So there are these two things working against us.
It is. So here is this own standing beside yourself. I was really captivated by the translation of that Greek word, that you're standing by yourself to make yourself. It's like there's this dual you there almost. And that really is, you have got to observe yourself. There is nobody who's going to come up with a stronger conclusion that you are approved of God than you.
No one.
Nobody can do that for you. I can stand up and teach it. Barris can teach it. We can all teach it until your ears bleed. We've taught it so much.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
On the weekend, I made a mistake.
Uh-oh.
I want to confess to you. You're the nearest, so I have to find the confessor.
Let me get my robe on.
Is it on? You got it?
I got it.
I listened to Charles Stanley.
Oh, no.
I know.
They saw his show flipping through the channels, and I thought, maybe, nah. But you were seduced.
Oh, was I ever? Yes, I listened to Charles Stanley, and when I finished listening to him, I felt as if God was out there and I'm in here.
Mm. That's about the only conclusion you can get from what any of these guys say, Barris, is this separation between God and man, and that's what the whole gospel is all about, is this this union to where that we truly can. Folks, I'm telling you. You can be the one that brings a breakthrough to your life more than anybody else. So, Barris, this whole issue, and especially it being brought out in this word study, what a powerful term to learn that you are the one who can stand beside yourself and let yourself know that you are approved of God.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard? Make a little sign? Email or do Facebook? Anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel. Gotta get out the gospel.
Goodness, this is a tremendous part of the gospel of revolution in becoming the observer. And that really is what we're talking about here. And when you stand in that position as the observer, all of the positions that you defer to other people you actually can be the best one of the group to be honest with yourself, counsel yourself, instruct yourself, guide yourself. You are the best one to do it. Why? Because you're the only one with all the information about yourself. And that's why honesty with yourself is so vitally important. Sometimes we look at honesty as just a option. But when you realize when we're not honest with ourselves, the wrong counsel we will give ourselves, the wrong instruction we will give ourselves, the wrong observation we will take in by ourselves when we are not honest with ourselves, even if it's difficult to learn about ourselves. For me, even just being honest with myself about my true motives in something. This is just places that most people don't go. They don't really care. It's a game. It's a game between people as to who's saying what, and the honesty of the situation is not the goal. It's the game of the situation.
A lot of the time, it's about what you can get away with.
Yes. And the sad thing about it is that if we knew the bigger picture here, when it's something we only doing or saying what we can get by with, we are robbing ourselves of being the best us to ourselves. I do observe how people treat me. I am moved by how people treat me, good, bad, or indifferent. I think indifferent is probably one of the cruelest ones.
Yeah, really.
And but if we can, and let me tell you, I really believe that the gospel gives us this position to be that observer in our own lives to the point to where that our honesty with ourselves, about ourselves, in comparison to whatever we are in, will give us the right way out of any situation or the best way to deal with a situation. But apart from that honesty, and the reason I'm emphasizing this, you really turned me on with that definition of the word study. And the reason we're emphasizing this is the power of the gospel. You see, other people are asking God what to do, how to see, where to look. And the fact of it is that you've been so transformed into a new creation that you should be the only true observer, the only true counselor, the only true divider of truth in your life. You should be the one. And as we listen to each other, you see, it's just like what we're saying to you. We're trying to show you a different way of thinking. And you can, and this is a different way of thinking, folks. Believe me, this is drastically different than where we came from. We're not talking about how to win an argument or how to prove you're right. In this new place where your identity has been settled, none of that is even relevant anymore. It doesn't make any difference who wins. It doesn't make any difference who's right or who's wrong. Those things now have dropped back out of even our peripheral view, and now they are no longer things that determine how we think.
This sounds an awful lot like follow your heart.
Oh, yes.
See, here is a big difference between the gospel revolution and where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You were taught that your heart was deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who could know it? And before the cross, that was exactly what all those people had. They only ever had my heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Along comes Jesus. Along comes the cross. Along comes Christianity. Along comes the Baptist church, the Pentecostal church, the Catholic church. And suddenly, now your heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? It's deceitful above all things. And the cross changed
nothing. Yeah.
But the gospel revolution says,
follow your heart. Of the thing that I hear people quote me about the most, it is this statement and then the response that I gave to the question, which someone asked in a recorded session. So the question comes up, but Mike, what if I follow my heart and my heart leads me into a ditch? And my response was, keep following your heart, because the heart that led you into the ditch has the wisdom to lead you out of the ditch. And gosh, I've heard so many people quote that. Of all the things that I think I've ever taught, I think that response to that particular question. So it is a challenge to trust your own heart. But if you are being honest with yourself, you can always follow your heart. You can always trust your heart. But you cannot sit back and know somewhere in your heart that you're not being honest and come up with a proper direction from your heart.
Let me speak to all of those Calvinists out there. If you are truly chosen, if you were elected, then you're going to make it anyway. Mm. It ain't going to cost you a thing to follow your heart. Because you're in.
Yes, that's what they teach.
Yeah. Now, to all you Arminians out there, it doesn't matter. Follow your heart. Because let's say you go wrong, you can always get born again.
Again?
Well.
Again. Again.
See, it ain't going to cost you to find out whether this is real. But what will stop you is your filters.
Mm-hmm. Pierce, what do you think places those filters there? I mean, you know, we talk a lot about those filters being there. You know, we've lived this life, you and I both. You're a bit older than I am, but...
Say it again. I want to hear that again. And at the end of it, please say, sir.
I'll say it before and after. Sir, you are a bit older than I am, sir. 11 months worth even. But, we've all lived this life, and we make these statements about filters, but what places those filters there? Now, we've talked about how that not being honest with ourselves. Is there something about the moment that we choose to not deal with the truth that we develop filters? Where do these filters come from, and how do they develop?
I think it goes deeper than that. I think that deep in the heart psychology of a person, there are fundamental, adumbral, almost genetical things which occur as soon as we, in fact, probably before birth. Tests have been undertaken that show that when you play certain kinds of music to your fetus, so you're playing music through a speaker, those sounds can be heard by the unborn child, that this will have an effect on the adult product of that unborn child. There are too many studies that indicate that what happens early in life affects us almost for life.
Mm-hmm.
The Jesuits learned this many, many years ago. The Jesuits are the armed militants of the Catholic Church. They are the people who will put down any insurrection. The Jesuits, who within a century of their inception became the teachers and leaders of the Catholic Church in many, many areas. They said something which to this day still resonates around the globe, and that is this. Give us a child until they're 7 years old and we will give you the man. I said to my sister the other day after I had this hymn, this brethren hymn from, 50 years ago, half a century ago, it was inculcated into me. And I said to my sister, how long is it going to be before I don't have these tunes running around through my head? They're haunting me. And I remember something that John Mull said. And he said,
the older you get, the more your brain cells get filled up with garbage, and it's hard to dump those things. I've tried to do one of those dumps where you just go and plug in somewhere and just let all the old crap out and make room for the new. It just doesn't work that way. You got to override it somehow, and I'm working on that.
If there was ever a person in the Gospel Revolution who could have been called more of a Gospel Revolutionary, I don't know who they are. But he said, You've got to keep switching out the crap.
Yeah.
You've got to keep taking it out and replacing it with something. There is an old saying about the fact that when we hear something for the first time, we say, oh, that's crap. And the second time we hear it, well, we say, well, you know, he said a couple of things that were good. And the third time we say, well, yeah, I agree with that, but I don't agree with that. And the fourth time we're saying, you know, mostly this guy's got it together, but he's very wrong here. And the fifth time we say to ourselves, and this is listening to the same thing, we say to ourselves, well, of course. I mean, anyone knows that, but I wish he'd just said that differently. And the sixth time we say, well, I always believed that. I mean, what's so different about that? There is something about the
consistent, persistent, and repetitive
effect of the gospel in our lives that makes a big difference. Now, it's made a difference to me. I don't have those hymns, those old songs running around my brain as much. When they do, and I've really started to say to myself, I'm just going to, every time it happens, I'm going to replace it with a rock and roll song of the 50s or 60s or 70s or something. I am going to purposefully and willfully displace this thing in my mind. Don't know how that's going to work, mate, but the filters, why do they work? I think it was the way we were created, and I don't understand it.
But the one thing that we do know is that the gospel has an uncanny way of dislodging those filters.
Oh, our friend Jackie Barnard said something. He wrote a little poem, and here it is.
The gospel says the war is done. Guilt and judgment, there's none. The Father's covenant with the Son made God and human family one. God and man enjoy the gain. That stealthy gospel rides again. Before the light had dawned in me, difference was all that I could see. Oh, if you don't pray the sinner's prayer, you're on your way to hell's despair. But now, I know we're all the same. A stealthy gospel rides again. New wine in old skins cannot stay. New skin's a must, the old will burst, and old and new will fall away. New wine's a fountain from within, that stealthy gospel rides again. How well I see in life's rear view, my criticism came undone. My mind began to open up, judging had a softer touch. I am so free. So calm, so sane. That stealthy gospel, it rides again.
And Mike, Jackie just about said it all there, didn't he?
Well, it really is true. And this is not an isolated experience that Jackie has had. This is status quo. I mean, this is the thing that happens, is this finding that suddenly the world opens up into a whole different window. I remember when I was trying to get through this, Barrison, the simplest terms is what I have to rely on. I can't jump these quantum leaps into a whole new way of thought. It's just got to go slow. That's just the way that I think my way through things. And I remember there were two situations where I actually was sitting and talking with someone, and I started explaining things I've never heard before. And that happens to gospel revolutionaries all the time.
Mel says it to me all the time now.
And because you begin to explain something and you realize, just because your paradigm shift has taken place, you're now allowing truth to come through you from your innermost being that you really have not processed in your brain yet. It is the strangest experience ever, and one of the most enjoyable. But two of those things, about, and this really was about following your heart. You know, that's what we're talking about, and this whole observation of self. Two things now, Barris. And in one conversation, I was trying to explain to somebody about this being the observer, and how that when one person sees things one way and another person sees things another way. All right, so that's like going to the back of my house and looking out the back windows where my beautiful pond and waterfall is, and fireplace that my buddy Chris gave to me and installed for me. And Barris, you're standing there explaining how beautiful this is, but instead of looking out the same window, I'm looking out the front window trying to see what you're seeing. Well, I see a street. I see other houses. What's wrong with you? Why are you talking about this waterfall and pond? I don't see a waterfall and pond. But see, it's when we do not see out the same window as the other person, there has to be a willingness to let somebody take us by the hand. See, and you don't have to be afraid. This is the powerful thing about the gospel and growing, is even if their view is wrong, walk with them and stand and look out their window with them. Try to see what they're seeing. See, and that's the thing. You don't have to try to see. It's either there or it's not. And you can point out, well, you said there was a waterfall out there. That's not a waterfall. That's a cascading rose bush. That's not a waterfall. There's no water out here at all, or whatever you might see. But it's the freedom, the confidence to leave your window and go look out someone else's window just for a moment. Now, that was one of the things that helped me to learn how to trust my own heart, that I'm not afraid of somebody else's opinion. Oh, man. Oh, if I could tell you what a freedom that has been. That's the essence of what redemptionism is. That's the working out of redemptionism in someone's life. When your whole direction in life is ruled by who agrees with you or who disagrees with you, by whom you're offended or by whom compliments you or accepts you, when it's ruled by whether or not you think God is on your side or against you, talk about casting aside a whole paradigm and filter. I used to filter everything through, was it God or was it the devil? When that began to literally fall like sand and begin to just drop completely, I'm in a whole different world. I didn't even know I had a heart to follow. We isolate ourselves from ourselves and wonder why, even when we're around people, we feel lonely.
Mm.
There is an intimacy that you must have as the observer of your own life with yourself. You must have a relationship with yourself that no one else can have. And my goodness, be kind to yourself. Goodness gracious, if you know we get upset because others are angry with us. I remember one instance in my life as I was just coming to grips with this view and opinion of God thing. And I remember I used to get so frustrated and so angry with myself when I would do something wrong or stupid, just, you know, one of those Mike Williams moments, you know. And I remember I was driving down the road, and, man, I was feeling good. I was escaping depression. I didn't feel that horrible effect of depression in my mind and in my life. And all of a sudden, I realized I'd done something that was so stupid. It was just so stupid. And Barris, I started cussing myself out. Now, I know nobody else out there's ever done this. I cussed myself out so bad that if it would have been anybody else cussing me like that, they would have had hell to pay for saying the things that I said to myself.
Woo-hoo.
Nobody's ever said things to me like I have said to me.
Really?
And Barris, the moment...
Say that again.
Nobody has ever said to me the things that I have said to me.
Wow.
The names I called myself with such anger that I had toward myself. And Barris, the moment I did that, this sinking feeling began in my heart. I was beginning to enjoy being freed from depression. And
Yeah. I was just going to say, well, hang on, go back 5 minutes. How were you feeling 5 minutes ago?
I was feeling great. I was enjoying my day.
What, now you wanted to, pardon, kill yourself?
And now all of a sudden this sinking feeling, I wasn't all the way back to suicide, but...
And the only person in the car...
was me.
Okay, let me get this right. So between you
and
you...
And you.
And you, yeah. You had this whole conversation which took your atmosphere from pleasant peace...
Yes.
...to absolute...
Back to depression.
Back to hell.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I talked myself into it.
In what period of time?
Ooh, seconds. I don't think a full minute passed before I went from one to the other. And I remember deciding at that point, you know, what we're doing today is very important. I hope people are getting what they need out of this because it is vitally important. How you treat yourself. And you just can't go around with this Pollyanna view of yourself. You've got to have a gospel revelation of yourself. And this revelation is so powerful. The other point that came to my mind as we were talking about this, talking about, you know, being able to strip away this whole mindset to just begin to realize you've got a heart. Folks, you know, we're talking to some people about following their heart, and they don't even know they have one. That, you know, where is it? You know, what if you guys keep talking about my heart? Where's my heart?
How do I identify my heart?
Exactly. I was talking with another friend, actually two friends, and one of them was in quite a dilemma and just didn't know what to do. I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I so identified with that terrible place of just not knowing what to do. And we were sitting there in this living room, and this sofa was sitting in a certain place, and the living room in its association with the hallway that led to the front door was all, you know, associated in a certain way. And he kept saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And suddenly, just inside of me, it's just, I said, the first thing, you have to accept where you are. You can't know how to move forward until you accept where you are. Where are you? And he didn't even know what I was talking about. And this was in relationship to a job or something. And so we had to identify where he was, you know, where he was with his career, his education, where was he working? Did he like it? Did he not like it? And then it was like this peace came over him because he finally identified where he was. See, he was trying to figure out how to get to another point without acknowledging where he truly was. And again, you're the only one who can identify where you are. As much as I love you, I can't tell you where you are.
Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Enjoy yourself.
While you're still in the pink, the years go by as quickly as a wink.
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
Hey! When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
A friend of mine, Billy, you hear me talk about Billy Couch a lot. Bill's just a great buddy of mine and helps me think things out sometimes when...
That's a friend.
Yeah, really, isn't it? And we're sitting in his truck outside his business a long time ago. And between us, I don't know to this day who came up with it, but we came up with this. We're all on a journey, and it is what it is. And I want to say to our friends out there today, you are where you are. This is not rocket science. You are where you are. And it doesn't matter what brought you to here, and it doesn't matter where you're going from here, but you have to first know that you are where you are. Second thing you must know is that you're on a journey, and you ain't complete. How amazing that we humans like to think we need to get in as much as we can in this particular lifetime. Who said it's the only lifetime you have? Number one. Number two, you are where you are. Where you are going is going to depend on how you follow your heart. You can't follow anything else, because tell me where there is anything, even approximating a concrete position anywhere else. There is none. Don't tell me it's in 40,000 different brands of Christian religion, or for that matter, the other 5,000 or 6,000 brands of other religions. The only thing you know is where you are now. Accept it, love it, and say to yourself, I feel so good where I am, but I don't feel good enough to stop. Because that is the truth, isn't it, Michael?
It is the truth. And you must realize that only you can know where you are. And only you can stop and locate yourself. And, man, I'm telling you, you know, as we were sitting there in that living room, I asked my friend David, I said, I want you to close your eyes. I said, I was in their home. And I asked David, I said, I want you to close your eyes. And I said, I want you to stop and think that you are sitting where I am. And I want you to tell me what you would do to find the door with your eyes closed. And he said, no, I'm sitting where you are, not where I'm at, right? I said, yes, you're sitting where I am. And he said, well, I would get up and I would turn to the left. And then I would turn to the left again. I would walk about 8 feet, and then I would turn to the right, and then I would go about 4 or 5 feet to the front door. And I said, now, you're not where I'm at. What if you follow those instructions trying to find the door from where you are?
Wow.
And I said, think it out. I said, now you want the front door, right? But if you fail to identify where you are, and you get up and you walk to the left, and then you turn to the left again and go about 8 feet, and then you turn to the right, where will you be? And he realized he would have had to walk through the wall to get to the bathroom, is where he would be. So, folks, it's so vitally important. I know this sounds so simplistic, but it is this simple. This is how simple following your heart truly is. You've got to identify yourself. Number one, you got to identify yourself, not where you are. You got to identify yourself. The way you identify yourself is to study, to show yourself approved, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed. You got to identify who you are. That's what the gospel does. Because you know who you are, you're not afraid of where you are. And you can admit it. You see, sometimes the hardest thing with finding direction in life is simply admitting things that we think are shameful about where we are. We won't accept the fact that we are where we are. Goodness gracious, talk to anybody with an addiction, and they simply, what's the number one thing in any addiction program? You've got to accept the fact you're an addict, or you're going nowhere. You're not going anywhere until you accept where you are. But you see, being an addict is where you are, not who you are. Oh, please, please understand this. When somebody is trying to get you to accept that you're addicted to something, they're not saying this is what you are. You can accept this is what you do because of who you really are. And from that point, Barris, we can begin to negotiate a way forward in life that is purposed. And let me tell you, if you're standing there in the middle of that confusion, waiting on the will of God and waiting for a purpose, the purpose that God has for your life, you will be there 10 years from now when I talk to you again, or in a worse shape. But you are not going to move toward what you want. You stay stagnant in that place. Now, the thing that is so powerful about the gospel is we really don't teach these things, Barris. We just teach the gospel. And guess what's happening? Goodness, Jackie's poem, the guest that you just had in your home, my gosh, and people around the planet who the gospel itself is doing this. People are finding their identity. Therefore, when you find who you are and you don't have any shame, you can accept where you are in life. When you can accept where you are, you can begin the journey. There's some people not on a journey, Barris. They're just not on a journey. They're just stuck.
Yeah. How do you start a journey when you're stuck? Yeah. And this is the reason why most people stay in religion. They're stuck.
Exactly.
And you can't fault them. They are the product of their own upbringing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is a very powerful thing, and we, goodness, you know, there's times, you know, when you've stepped into this, it becomes the new norm for you, to the point where you actually forget that other people may not have the freedom or the liberty nor the confidence to follow their heart. But nonetheless, whether you have the liberty to do it, whether you have the confidence to do it, doesn't negate the fact that you should do it.
I was thinking just at the beginning of the show that we needed to have some more certificates, graduate certificates, because, Mike, there are people who have come through the gospel revolution. I hate them. 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 They don't think like I think. I hate them. They should be clones. They should be. You hear what I'm saying, mate?
I hear you.
I think we need some graduation certificates. I read a lot of what Kim Harvey says and Bowler says and Jody Burns and a whole bunch of, I can't even begin to mention the names without offending someone. But these are people who have come out of the cage and really are free. Not they jumped out of a smaller cage into a bigger cage,
yes.
But they really are free. And I love these people. Do they think like me? No. Should they? Well, heck yeah, you know that. But they don't, and I so admire them. I think that these are the people who are the real graduates of the gospel revolution.
Oh, exactly.
Now, we're not saying love us and leave us. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying, I mean, we want to be a family.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to be. But we want you to think for yourself.
It is the objective of the gospel revolution. And we're not offended because you think for yourself. And like Bear said, that doesn't mean you got to leave the family because you think for yourself and it happens to be different from. Goodness, I cannot tell you the close friends that I have maintained who have went with me from earliest parts of the gospel revolution, and there's two or three of them that went into atheism, there's some that went into Buddhism, there's some that went into mysticism, some that went into being agnostic, just about every route that you can think. Now, the majority of them have stayed, and there's some that just disappeared. I don't even know what they think anymore because they just disappeared. But there has been a few, and it was really funny to watch the process of their remaining family with me while going into, we'll pick atheism. One of my closest friends in this world is an atheist, and he was one of the strongest supporters of the gospel revolution that I've ever had. Three-time world kickboxing, heavyweight kickboxing champion of the world. I remember the time when Ricky, oh man, when people would, and Ricky was in some of these meetings where people would get angry with me, and they didn't know who was sitting in the room ready to defend me. And oh my gosh, you know, and talk about stealthy. Ricky could walk up beside you with a smile on his face, and the next thing you'd know, you felt a pain in your gut and you didn't even know why, and collapsing to the floor, and you didn't even hardly see him move. But he always wanted to travel with me and protect me. And I remember when he expressed that to me and how deeply it touched my heart that he wanted to travel with me to protect me. And he would get so upset if anybody was harsh to me or unkind to me. I mean, he took it personally. And he said, let me out there. I'll sit up there with you. He said, they won't do it again.
They won't do it twice.
And now, Ricky went into atheism, came back out, went back in again, and I remember him testing the waters there so clearly, and Rick could tell you this himself. And Rick was testing the waters to see at what point I was going to throw him away, and it just didn't offend me at all that he had gone the direction that he did, and I still loved him, and he still loves me. This all culminated. This story is just so beautiful. Ricky started posting on our Friends of Mike Williams Facebook about 4 years ago or so, and he just came off as such a jackass. Oh my gosh. I mean, he was out to offend everybody. You stupid Christians, you blah, 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 blah. And, of course, I knew who it was, so I was not upset at all. But Jeff's first introduction to Rick was this ravenous, atheist that was out to rip everybody's skull off that believed in God. At that time, the office was here in the house, and so I had not explained my relationship with Rick to Jeff. And so one day the phone rang and Jeff was here where I'm at right now, which was the office in the front of the house. And Jeff came out with the phone in his hand and his eyes were like saucers. And he had his hand over the phone and he said, "It's Rick Davis." And he had told me what Rick had been saying on the site. So I said, "Give me that phone." And so I reached and snatched the phone from Jeff's hand and walked into the kitchen, which my dining room and kitchen are all one area. And I walked in and I just grabbed the phone and I put it up to my ear and I said, "Get your blankety blank 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 off of my blank blank website and don't you blankety blank blank ever come back again." And I fill in the blanks. And I couldn't get it all out until I was falling on the floor laughing. And of course, Rick was laughing on the other end of the phone too. And Jeff, I almost collapsed in the floor from sheer fright as to what was actually taking place here. So, you know, that's that great of a confidence that that relationship. You know, and I hear people voice this in other persuasions, but it just doesn't work out in the working out. You know, It just doesn't do it. You know, you don't still have that. This past summer, Rick and his wife were planning to come down and visit me during the summer. Their plans fell through. But here's somebody who disagrees with me 100% about even believing in God. Started out in the gospel and still, and then I remember Ricky went back on the Facebook page, and this was after he and I talked that day, and we just laughed through the whole time. We didn't really get to talk about anything because we got so tickled about my greeting him on the phone the way that I did. And so then Rick Davis, who has been on Facebook just beating everyone to pieces with this rhetoric, then he went back on and posted on Facebook, Mike Williams is the greatest man on earth. I love this man with all my heart. And so, I mean, you know, he's like a schizophrenic. So.
See, I wish you'd have told me this before I abused the heck out of this guy.
Clearly, well, you don't. He likes it, though. He likes being abused.
He does?
Oh, yes. He loves it.
It's a little bit of masochism, is it?
Yes, yes. Well, being
did I tell you about the masochist and the sadist?
I've got a feeling I'm going to hear.
Oh, you know you are. Yeah, so they meet each other in a bar, sadist and the masochist, and the masochist says, hurt me. And the sadist says, no. Danny, the guy that we, you know, started the show, Danny said, awesome, once again, your podcast line up with my questions. No, Danny, your question made the podcast because...
Exactly. Questions are the lifeblood of the gospel revolution. I don't think we have to prove that point, do we?
You may be wondering what's going on. You heard what Michael said, is that right or wrong? Don't be shy now, pick up the phone call. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. We love you, every single one of you. And we especially thank all of you for the financial support that keeps this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of the gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on area code 234-564-0971 and leave your voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thank you to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. All the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so, it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from Michael, Mike, and Mikey, right here in Houston. Take your choice. It's better than other names I've been called.
We three will wait for you, even till eternity. My echo, my shadow, and me.
So remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you are right. But if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better, better.
As soon as you down the first one, you can't lose. Bass, lots of noise. Kiss, lots of boys. Kiss, lots of girls. If that's something you're into, when straight and narrow gets a little too straight, roll out the joint or don't. Just follow your arrow wherever it points out. Follow your arrow wherever it points. Just disappoint them, just cause you can't beat them. Don't mean you should join them. So make lots of noise, kiss lots of boys, kiss lots of girls. If that's something you're into, when the straight and narrow gets a little too straight, roll out the joint, or don't. Just follow your arrow wherever it points out. Just get so many trips round the sun that you only live once. So make lots of noise, kiss lots of boys, kiss lots of girls. If that's what you're into, when the
Gospel Revolution.